Yo, 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 welcome to Crate 808, and today we have on a very special guest, multi-award-winning radio, TV and DJing legend, a true household name across the country, with a voice that's so recognisable he couldn't even prank me on the phone pretending he's from the Inland Revenue without me guessing who it was. Yes, it's one take Trev, Mad Hatter himself, and Trevor Nelson's in the house. How are you doing, man?
It's been great to be on this podcast. The Crate, man. Come on. I love your work.
Thank you, Trevor. I love your work, bro. I was just going to say, if you mention to any certain British Asian 40-year-old the lick, they generally go a little bit mad, mate. So I know my family are going to be loving this. I know my friends are going to be loving this. So that's what I'm here for.
I don't know what it is about Asians in the UK that absolutely went mad for the lick, but there was a definite sea change when I did that show.
Yeah.
At my gigs, and just I think a lot of Asian kids in the UK really identified with it, and we'll get to that, but it's great to be here, man.
I love that. I love that, man. I can't wait to get digging in them holes. But before we start, I've got to ask you, I'll ask everyone, man. Trevor, what's the least hip hop thing you've done in the last 24 hours, my friend?
So easy. I've just done a film for the RHS, for the Chelsea Flower Show. You can't top that. No one's going to come on here and top tour of my garden with the garden designer, Matthew Wilson, right? That is what I was sitting there talking about, hydrangeas and all, I can't remember the name of half these plants, but yeah.
Trev, right. So first of all, your list of like things you've done, I remember you doing NFL, bro. I remember you're doing Formula One. Yeah. I've seen you doing all this stuff, and now you're doing gardening. You're just aging beautifully, my friend.
Dude, listen, let me tell you something. In lockdown, how many people wanted a garden?
Oh, man.
How many people? I used to live in a loft apartment, swanky loft apartment in the city.
Yeah.
Records out there, you know, gallery, glass for bedroom, all that stuff. Everyone used to walk and go, yeah. All I used to think was, I need a garden. You know, and everyone's going, no. And then I sold it and I moved out to the suburbs. And everyone's thinking, why did you get out of town? It was right by Old Street. And a year later, everybody's like, well, a couple of years later, everyone's going, how's your garden? How's your garden? Because in all fairness, it kept me sane.
Yeah.
You know, I keep fish. Seriously.
Yeah.
I keep fish. And I think you'll find that, and I've noticed on this podcast, a lot of people surprise me with the least hip-hop thing they've done.
Yeah, yeah. But no one's ever done gardening and fish. I love that.
Horticultural society. Check it out. That's where it's at.
Oh, Trevor, that's beautiful, man. Beautiful. But yeah, I know. It's been mad. It's been mad times. But to get someone like yourself on, I was trying to figure, like, you know, where do I start and all this? I was like, look, first of all, I know you from back in the day. You've seen the shift of black music in the UK, hip-hop, R&B, soul. And R&B and soul, you were one of them, and I hate to use that term nowadays, but it was one of them gatekeepers for me back in the day where either I'm watching Flavor or The Lick. But I just wanted to find your perspective, right, of when you were starting in radio, how hard was that for you, bro? Like, everyone has these stories of pirate, but how hard was it for you?
Yeah, I was quite lucky in that I was on a pirate station called KISS. That we all know became a legal station. So there were loads of pirates. I mean, loads. The fact that ours was the one that was the most progressive, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it got a license meant that we were playing everything back end of the 80s. You know, I was into hip-hop, house, R&B, soul, everything that moved that had melody, rhythm, artistry. I mean, Big Daddy Kane, the Cold Cold Chilling label. Oh my God, Bow Down, right?
Yeah, love that.
The early days, my first hip hop tune that really meant something. People used to say, they'd say Rapper's Delight was the first hit, and then Grandmaster Flash, The Message was the most important game changing hip hop record. Teela Rock, It's Yours. Anyone who's a hip hop head, Teela Rock, It's Yours is a game changer for me. When I heard that, I was just like, It's Yours. I was like, wow, this is hip-hop.
Yeah.
Now, the others were hits, but this is hip-hop. Yeah. And I tried to play all of those tunes on my show. And then when we got legal, everybody went to a specific genre. Everybody said, well, I'm house. That was the first time it became sort of like, okay, this is where it's going. It's a split. There's definitely tribes of the big tribe, the big black music tribe, and then there's tribes off it, offshoots. And what am I? And my heart was always soul music, you know. So even if I like hip-hop, I like soulful hip-hop. If I like house, I like soulful house. If I like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
I was doing street soul on KISS FM, but no one was that interested, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everybody was making money doing drum and bass or dance or house, whatever, you know. And
yeah,
we were stuck in 100, 200 capacity clubs on a dodgy night of the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And
yeah,
I stuck with it and I was true to it. You know, I just stuck with it. Mm. And it was good to me because I think around, you've got to look at the back end of the 80s, it was Bobby Brown. The big people were Bobby Brown, Luther Vandross, Anita Baker, Alexander O'Neill, and then came Jodeci and Mary J. Blige.
Yeah.
And they changed the game. And for me, Jodeci, Mary J. Blige had an attitude. They weren't just dressed up in suits and dresses. It was like proper. Mary was like a tomboy. Jodeci were like gangster.
Yeah.
But yet they sung like beautifully. You know what I mean?
And yeah.
It was an attitude. That was the game changer. The attitude in R&B is what got me gripped.
Yeah.
You know, there was something special about the production and the fact they weren't trying to be older than they were. I think most R&B singers would be 21, come out in a suit and look 30.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And absolutely turn their noses up at hip hop.
Yeah.
That's street kid. But what we had with them was they looked their age, they acted their age, and they had attitude. And that appealed to a younger generation. And that's what got me really into the R&B thing.
Yeah. So when you're trying to rep these newer artists, this newer version of R&B soul, which, let's be honest, you've mentioned two acts there and we can't not talk about Puffy, like having such an instrumental hand in there. How hard was it repping those when you were doing either your radio or if you're trying to sell records or DJing?
I've got to be honest with you. My first job in the business was importing 12-inch singles to record shops. So I imported them from America. And I was at ground level. When I was in my early 20s, I was the first job I had was, I loved it, man. I was going to, on the phone, ordering, what you got? And someone says, I've got a new artist there. We've got a new act called Public Enemy and, you know, whatever. Yeah. But then when they went onto R&B, you couldn't hear it. They'd hold the phone to the speaker. It was none of this technology we have today.
Yeah.
Oh, I just send it on my phone on WhatsApp. None of that. You know, it was like, I hold it to, and I'd order them, race to all the key record shops, independent record shops, which were absolutely important. Because those DJs would then play them, the bigger DJs would get the tunes and play them. So when you run into that store, they're all waiting for you.
Yeah.
Who are you? You're nobody, but you've got the tunes. It gave me a real good foundation for, you know, what sells, what's good, why is that selling? Even if I didn't like a tune, I knew a shop wanted loads of it. And I thought, why do they like this? You know what I mean? And you have to revisit it. And so it got me really at the base level. By the time I got to radio, I was like, okay, how am I going to do this? And the one thing I made sure I did, well, as you know, you're talking to me now, I've always been the same. I've never slanged it. I was just straight, right?
Yeah.
And I understood my place. You know, I wanted to be a communicator.
Mm.
I didn't want to be, it wasn't all about me. I wanted to put the music first.
Yeah.
And I was made sure that I don't care what's going on with me. The music's just ahead. I never had MC shouting my name when I'm doing a set. I hate that. I just wanted the music to deal with everything. And I think that's the secret for me. Communicating.
Yeah.
Communicating was the key. And it was easy. I loved the music. So it was so easy to play it, you know?
Yeah.
The first Mary song, for example, was You Remind Me that I played. I remember getting it on Kiss and it was on a soundtrack and it was a cover of a Patrice Rushen song, but it had a hip hop beat to it. And I'm like, she can sing. She's a little off key.
Mm.
It's not as good as the original, but I love the hip hop flavor. Let me play this.
Yeah.
And I'm playing this, you know, and then, you know what I mean? And you just have to try and translate that to the audience because at the time everyone's going, isn't that a Patrice Rushen song? That's a bit of a weird cover. And you're like, no.
Yeah.
And you're fighting the forces of tradition.
Yeah.
And it's a great place to be. It's a great place to be when creativity is happening, when something's happening, you know, something's happening. And this guy Puffy, we'll get to him.
Yeah,
was absolutely instrumental in just about everything that excited me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Because that's really interesting when you're trying to communicate something. I mean, the barriers were up, I suppose, because I was getting it through publications. I didn't have pirate radio where I was, but I know so many people have pirate. Mm. But when you're then going to legit, you're going to pirate to legit is a big move, I'm imagining, anyway. Were there any sacrifices you were having to make? Just, I know because you're a collector as well, you must have been collecting so many different genres that you were like, no, I'm going to have to be a bit more sacrificial about this. And I don't know, like really focus into what will get my career advanced. Was there anything like that for you?
Well, yeah, it was. I don't think the battle was about getting your career advanced. If you do, if you select well, I was known as a selector. I'm not a scratch mix DJ. I'm not. A lot of people thought that's the way forward. That's fine. They were good at it. Mm. I was known as a selector. I could always put together a good playlist. I always took my radio show really seriously, much more seriously than I ever took a club night. A club night to me was a bonus.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't into the art form as much as everybody else. I was more into the radio show is the one place. You're doing a gig in a club, there's 300 people there, 400 people there. They're going mad. They're going nuts. You walk over there, you're two inches taller. Yeah. Your chest puffed out. You go home. But really, there are 300 people or 400 people that 50 on the guest list maybe, 30 on the guest list. Some of them don't buy tunes. They just dance well. They rave well. They flirt. They mix. You know what I mean? The real people deep down are the listeners. They're the silent people. They're the ones who support the industry. They're the ones who buy tunes. They're the ones who, some of them never go out. I guarantee some of your viewers will say to you, I had a record collection before I went to a club.
Yeah.
I was nervous to go to a club, or my parents wouldn't let me go to a club.
Exactly. Exactly.
But my parents would let me listen to the radio or watch the telly. That was my club. That's 20 times, 50 times, 100 times the audience in the club listening to your show. If you've got 50,000 listeners, that's way more than can squeeze into that 300. You know, that guy might rip you on the decks, but the truth is you're doing more for the industry by connecting with people. And that was, you know, I just bided my time, was really patient, and integrity was really important. And I think, and the music just kept coming. This is the key thing. You know, you had, I've mentioned Jodeci and Mary, but then you had SWV, you had Jade, you had, you know, you had Blackstreet. You know, when Blackstreet came, I was like, this is Titanic, you know, the swing beat sound. You had Heavy D and the Boys still going. You had all that Uptown stuff. Then we moved on to the Bad Boy, the West Coast, and Nas and
Quest.
I decided that if you like R&B, you can like hip hop, because at first a lot of R&B was ladies. Ladies loved it, you know, and they turn their nose up a little bit up at hip hop. It's a bit grimy, a bit unwashed. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We dress up to go to an R&B club. We dress down to go to a hip hop club.
That's exactly it. But yeah.
I wanted that. I wanted both of them. Mm. And I didn't see why they couldn't live together. To be fair, sorry, I will let you speak.
No, Trev, I'm here for the ride, bro. I'm here for this ride.
Yeah, but to be fair, when hip hop and R&B actually blew up properly, especially R&B, was when hip hop and R&B did that. Came together. So there was barely a tune. There was barely a hip hop tune without a female hook or a male hook on it. There was barely an R&B tune without an 8-bar, 16-bar rap or something in the middle. And so there was something for the fellas, something for the girls. The point in question is the ultimate tune for me, Method Man, Mary J. Blige.
I was going to go there with you. That's the perfection moment. That's the apex of that moment for me. Definitely.
Game breaker. That tune there was as hard as they come with Method Man.
Yeah. Dun, dun, yeah. Dun, dun.
On the rooftop, the video, Mary just looking gangster.
You know, just that nodding.
Classic Motown tune. That there is an iconic moment in music, not even hip hop, I mean, just music. Everything. That tune.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm so glad you're saying that because that's one of my favorite love songs generally. I just love that. Yo, just interrupting this episode to give you a quick update on our plans for 2021. But before I do, just remember to subscribe on YouTube and like this video. Also, get involved in the comments. We always have some dope takes on there. So shout out to people that are getting involved. We love reading them. And hopefully some more of you guys can get on there and we'll shout you out on the episodes coming up. Now, on to 2021. We here at Crate 808 are setting up a Patreon where for the price of a pint or a coffee every month, we'll be bringing you even more dope hip hop episodes. Simply go to crate808.com, subscribe to the newsletter, you'll get all the updates on our plans. But as a taster, each month we're thinking of bringing you 90s rap hidden gem album reviews that you can vote for. So if you enjoy people like Master Ace, Diamond D, The Lynch Mob, Paris, Big Noid, Blase, we'll be doing a lot more of those. We're going to do our Why I Love series, the MF Doom and J Dilla editions. Each month we'll bring on a guest and dig into why they love a certain Doom or JD track and then test that love. How deep is that love? Next up, we Wu-Tang Chronicles Ghostface Killer Edition. We're aiming here, I don't know if it's going to be good or bad, but we're aiming to go through every solo Wu project, and we're going to start with Ghostface catalogue. So we're going to go in, we're going to talk about the music, we're going to talk about the fashion sense, and just some of the amazing bars he's dropped in that career. And the Griselda Marathon, I want to do it, I want to do it. If we get enough patrons, we're going to do it. We're going to go through every single Griselda project, and really, let's dive in, yeah? So get involved, hit up crate808.com, subscribe to the newsletter, as well as the YouTube and the podcast. Now, back to the episode. I was going to say then, so you're going from, then you go into like radio, and you're like Radio 1, and that's like, must be a huge step. But I just wanted to figure where your real thinking changed, because I feel like radio is radio, and it's our lifeblood in hip-hop as well, especially. But like at that time, image became so huge in hip-hop. You had the videos, you had the style. It was just so cool. And then I remember you, MTV Bass starting. And on my memories, because I am a little bit older, I do remember when Blackwood was doing that, when it was a Blackwood program. And that was blowing my mind. And then bang, you came into MTV. Mm. How was that for you? What was that? Why did you think, you know what? I want to put my face on this. I want to go into camera.
I'm going to be really honest with you. Never had any aspirations I didn't have aspirations as a radio DJ. I was a record collector. It's luckily Kiss didn't care how you sounded. They cared what you had in your collection.
Yeah.
They were driven by everyone on Kiss had a phenomenal record collection. And I was just one of them. But then I got into the music industry. I was working at Cool Tempo Records, and we had Arrested Development, and then we got D'Angelo.
Wow.
We had Misha Paris and Gangstar, Lords of the Underground.
Crazy.
Bahamadia. Tried to get these artists played on national radio in this country. Are you mad? It was so hard. Yeah. You know, Arrested Development, obviously, just before I joined, they dropped their first album, and they had a lot of success because they got that. They were the Fugees before the Fugees, you know what I mean? And they were unique and everything. And I thought, that's so exciting. That's why I joined the label. But then when I got there, my job was club promotions. It was so hard to get national radio, or you can get specialist radio, you know, to play. Mm. And I started meeting a lot of the executives, black and white, who were in charge of black music at major labels. And we all agreed the struggle is real. You know what I mean? It's Radio 1 ain't playing our stuff. We get no TV at all. Unless you're MC Hammer or someone of that ilk, you're not getting national TV. You're not getting on the chart show.
Yeah.
You're barely going to get a couple of Pops appearance. And they were all powerful then. And I said, you know, we need TV. We desperately need TV. So when MTV Europe launched, I thought, hallelujah, manna from heaven.
Yeah.
Until I started watching it. Right? Yeah. I'm going to keep it real, brother. I'm not here to judge you, right?
I'm here.
Until I started watching it and I said, well, they had your MTV raps. I'm like, okay, I'd love a Dre. Yeah, it's good. And then it became a bit comical, and then it kind of waned a bit. And I thought, well, where's the... And then the R&B stuff, they did something called Amour, which was a bit cheesy. And I thought, this ain't what's popping, man. This isn't what's happening out there. Why aren't they... So I got... someone called me and said, there's a show, there's a slot on MTV. They're doing interviews, and you should go for it, and rah, rah, rah. And to be honest, I had the record company job. I had a radio show going, and I was like, I can't really, and I was full time. I couldn't do it, but I wanted to go to see what MTV was about. Look, I knew I couldn't do the job anyway, so I went and I just cussed them. I sat there I sat there, and this guy said, right, I'm going to film you. And I said, why aren't you showing more black videos, black music videos?
Damn.
I did straight up. People don't know this about me, and I'm not just saying it to gain brownie points because I'm at an age where I ain't got time to lie. I'm not doing it for any, you know. So he's looking at me really weird. There's a couple of them filming. What's with this dude? You know, and I'm like, no. I just need to know, why are we having to watch The Box? Mm. Right? Remember The Box? We had to pay to watch and pay to get a Busta Rhymes video on or something like that.
Yeah.
You have to watch Take That Five and all these other boys on before you get to.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah,
nonsense,
I do.
Right?
Yeah.
And we were doing it because MTV weren't playing our shit. So anyway, I didn't get the job. Obviously, Blackwood got it. That's when Richard first appeared.
That's Blackwood, right.
And Richard Blackwood actually did a show called, I think he did a show called Bass.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Called Bass. And it was, I remember him interviewing LL Cool J and stuff, but it was a mixture of all sorts of stuff. It was a mixture of all sorts of stuff. And it was obviously produced by the network. And Richard was, you know, he's just been a presenter. And then he did Select.
Mm.
And, you know, I was happy for the guy, you know what I mean? The brother on MTV. But it still wasn't the concise, it wasn't dedicated to R&B and hip-hop, that show. Mm. 2 years later, I think it was. I get a call. MTV would like to see you. They'd come up for an interview. Wow. I went, they don't want me. They want a model. Everyone looks like a model on MTV. They don't want me. They don't want me. I'm not interested. Anyway, I've never done telly before. Blah, blah, blah. But by this time, we're at crisis point. Yeah, I've gone back, and this time I'm serious. You know, I'm deadly, deadly serious, but I'm still not convinced that they want a real R&B or hip-hop show, right? So I go there, and I'm a bit suspicious, because in the time I last went there, I just see model-looking people on there. And a few well-known... Yeah, there was a few well-known people I knew, like Sarah Cox, and, you know, Russell Brand was on there, and Davina McCall was on there, and, you know, it was a stepping stone to do mainstream telly. Kat Deely, I think, was on there. Yeah. It was a stepping stone to do mainstream telly. I had no interest in mainstream telly. I just wanted music television. And I thought MTV should be my one stop. It should be everyone's one stop. So I got there anyway, did this audition. And when I was doing it, there was a guy with, it looked like Maxwell there, and there was another guy, and I thought, like,
yeah, that was the look.
Then next day they called me and they said, yeah, you got the show. And I said, what? So I went in, I was like, okay, who's going to teach me television? Yeah. I said, just do it.
That's amazing.
So I immediately came up with the concept of, right, okay, because I'd watched MTV and I thought, okay, how am I going to differentiate myself from everybody else? I said, I'm not going to be standing up. I want to be sitting down. I was old enough to learn that what you say at the beginning is what will stick. You've got to put your, not put your foot down. Who was I to put my foot down? I'd never done telly. I just knew this be strong. And I sort of said, I'm known on radio, you know, so I don't care about people looking at me. I want them to listen to what I'm saying. So that helped me, the camera panning off my face while I was talking. It was quite powerful, you know.
Yeah.
So the camera would pan off me like this and I'm still talking. It'd go into some stupid thing like a shirt or a bit of jewelry and pan around. You remember that?
Yeah, so, the lamps.
Early days of the lamps, you remember it, right? So we would just talk and I had the best crew, a really tight crew. I'll name some of them. Oh God, they'll kill me if I don't remember some of them. Sherwin Beckford and Dylan Kahn. Dylan Kahn joined a little while after. Yeah, one of your brethren, man.
Let's go. So, yeah.
He was like, he's so dedicated. And Dylan would write research and stuff, and Sherwin would be the director. And we always had other researchers, young kids coming in, and it was great. And one key I said to them is, look, can I get hip-hop news and R&B news direct from America? And they said, sure. I said, because you got America, you know, MTV in America is poppy. You know what I mean? You got news stories that we can't get and we don't see in England. And they said, yeah, that's where Sway came in.
Right.
Because Sway was not doing its thing. And you'd always see Sway on the lick. To this day, Sway said to me, man, I'm known in England because of your show. And I'm like, that's
but it's
great.
True. It's true.
That's great. All of a sudden, it's all coming together. MTV Europe was much smaller than MTV America. But when American artists came to the UK, they had to go and see the UK. If they had a hit, they'd be doing Top of the Pops. They'd have specialist interviews on Choice FM and Galaxy and Kiss and Radio 1. But they didn't really have TV unless they were big. So all of a sudden, I slotted right in there for every artist. So when Destiny's Child, new girl band comes out.
Unreal.
Straight to me. Because I was aware, we want them. And they're getting TV and it's MTV and they know about MTV because of America. So they're like, I'm really excited. Everything fell into place. It was just down then for us to do the best show we could. And to be honest, we had so much stuff we didn't put out that we really wanted to squeeze in. Because we wanted to sort of educate people, but at the same time, entertain people at the same time.
Yeah.
I had to do so many things to make up for the lack of black music on television, you know, that we left so many videos we wanted to play that we couldn't play because we wanted to do this story. Then it was a question of the culture. You know, when it comes to someone who's doing something like an entrepreneur, a young entrepreneur in this country would slip that in, or, you know, we had Lewis Hamilton on the show when he was like really young.
Yeah.
Went and interviewed him before he got his Formula One drive. And that sort of stuff, because he's the first black racing driver. You know, was it? Great. And it was, wow, it was immediately successful. And the name was, so we sat there and we're like, what should we call this show? What should we call this show? And I just thought, well, I think, you know, it's got to be snappy. It's got to be very snappy.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and I loved it. It just came the lick to me. And it was like, I'd heard someone else use the term, Mark Tondorai used the term on something. I don't even remember Mark Tondorai. He was on Radio 1 for a while. And he was around. But it was also something we said at weekends, occasionally, a clique of us used to say, so would you do it at the weekend? I went to this rave, man. oh, didn't expect it to be anything, man, but it was the lick. Do you know what I mean? And you didn't have to know what that meant to know what that meant, right? Obviously, it had other connotations.
It was a very sexy show.
It's a sexy word, four-letter word, which is great. And it, honestly, mate, within, I don't know, a couple of months of doing the show and hating looking at myself, because I just hated looking at myself on telly, but
yeah,
I thought, that's a good show, you know? That's a good show. And then I asked MTV how we need to market this show, because I don't think my people are watching this channel.
Right.
That's my next one. I said, they're watching The Box. They're watching these other channels. Mm. And not enough are watching MTV, because MTV was still driven by pop and rock and Euro and dance.
Yeah.
And enough, they didn't play enough hip-hop and R&B. And so they said, well, you know, I said, are you going to put billboards up? You're gonna, and they said, no, we're just going to advertise it on the channel. I said, well, you're just advertising to people who don't know anything about hip-hop and R&B, which was actually a good thing because they got into it.
Yeah.
But I said, no, I need my lot knowing it's on. You know, I'm a big DJ in London. I'm not necessarily a huge DJ nationwide, but I'm definitely well-known in London. So I said, I tell you what, when I do a club night, if the club holds 1,000 people, I'd do 10,000 flyers. I always do 10 to 1. If the club holds 500 people, I'd do 5,000 flyers. Right. And if you make your flyer good enough, youngsters tend to take it and take it home and keep it.
Yeah, yeah, it's so true.
Why don't we put the whole show on the flyer, the times it's on MTV? That way, we're never wasting a flyer. If we get people, oh, this dude's on MTV, what's this? You know, and people will be interested. First party we did, queue around the block, all the way down the street, and then it was all over.
Is it?
It was all over. We just strapped ourselves in. Honestly, I went on a ride, man.
Yeah.
Best ride of my life.
Hey, what's up? This is Black Thought, and you are now rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo. This is Stretch Armstrong.
Ooh-wee. My name is Bobito Garcia, a.k.a. Cool Bob Love.
You're now listening to Crate 808.
Hey, yo, what up, y'all? This is Prince Paul, and you're rocking with Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo, it's Evie Evidence, Dilated Peoples. You're rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast, my favorite shit. Let's go.
Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Master Ace from Brooklyn, New York, and you're checking out the Crate 808 Podcast. Real hip hop.
Those parties, I never ever went. I'm just going to be honest. I never got to go. But those parties, just mythical moments, bro. Like, oh yeah, I remember going. I know so many people who say they went and there's no evidence. There's no, it's just Trevor was great. It's all right. Okay.
They lied, some of them, didn't they?
Of course they did. But I remember, like, I think it was Destiny's Child at Ministry of Sound. That's one that a few of my friends. Genuinely went to, and they still talk about it to this day, man. There's these jaded 40-year-old parents who are like, God, remember we used to do that. And do you know what it comes down to, bro? Like, when you say there about British Asians or whatever, I don't know if this, I can't speak for everyone, but for my demo, the people I knew, we were so restricted at home. Like, I was a hip-hop head, but I love Boyz II Men. I loved Jodeci. They were my other influence, you know, that I loved that soul. Yeah. And then bang, when I knew there was a specific party and MTV helped, you know, you're saying there about people not watching it. It was honestly one of the things you had to set an alarm for. It was like, right, 6 o'clock, right, or whatever it was. Can't remember what time it was. Lick. Yeah, got that down.
Flavor. Get the VHS out.
Flavor at 1 a.m. or something silly on Channel 4. Do you remember that one? And it was like, those were where we were coming from. But then when I then go onto YouTube now, and I'm sure none of us ever thought this would be crystallized on YouTube, I'm seeing lick parties, where I don't even know if I can do the roll call without collapsing, There's
one. Which one you're going to talk about? It's one that the greatest party I've ever been to, had anything to do with. I think it's the greatest R&B party of all time. And I'm not blowing smoke up my own ass. I was in shock.
Break it down for the listeners.
I'll break it down for whoever. I'll break it down for you again, and I'm happy to talk about it.
Okay.
It's a memory of my life. And actually, it was 1999. I joined MTV in 98. We had done we did a lick party a month. After about the second month of shows, we started doing lick parties. Mm-hmm. We did them at King Street, Emporium.
Ah, right.
I deliberately went to a club that most of us couldn't get into. Right, that was the key. I'm very, very smart. I said, take me to a club that I could never get into.
Love that.
Decided the important footballers go there. Mm. People with money went there. My type of person didn't go there. Mm. And they, as soon as they saw the words M, T, and V, welcome.
Yeah, right? That's it.
So I used brand to get into places that black and Asian people weren't going to. And white. And, you know, I'm not strict black and Asian. Everybody, you know, everyone came to our party. So by that time, the reputation was big. And in Ireland, MTV was free.
Right.
I didn't know this, right? So in Ireland, MTV was terrestrial, whereas we were paying for it.
Yeah.
Quite a bit of money back in the day. So a lot of people would have to go around a friend's house to watch the lick.
Yeah.
Whereas in Ireland, you just put your telly on. It's the same in Scandinavia as well, apparently. So we had the MTV Music Awards that year in Dublin. I got on the plane with everybody else, and the lineup, it was the most R&B lineup of all time performing.
Right.
Whitney was there. Missy, Mariah, Mary.
Crazy. Already crazy.
TQ.
Oh, huge. Right. Huge at the time.
Right. At the time, West Side was huge, everywhere. Right? So I'm like, I get on the plane and I'm the voice of God. That they said to me, we'd like to do the voiceover, you know, so you introduce the artist, but you're not seen, you're sitting down outside. Backstage, and you're going, ladies and gentlemen, coming up next, you know, stay tuned because up next it's Whitney, it's Mariah, it's all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's exciting to me. Mm. So I've got backstage access, all areas pass. So we're saying, all right, if I'm going to be, let's do a lit party in Dublin, just sort of an after party, because the official MTV after party is always sponsored. And then there are about three other after parties going on, and we're just a little lick, we're just a little show in the channel. So we've got this venue, the Temple Theatre, holds about, I don't know, 1,500 people. I bought, you remember the Honeys?
Oh, do I? Yes.
Oh, yeah, okay. The Honeys were the only act that were booked.
Right. Right.
And what we did at the MTV part is we never announced who was going to perform. And there was a reason for that. I always found that American artists got so much love and UK artists didn't. So I wanted to have this situation where the way we're going to get UK artists to get love, people are so excited about the parties. Whoever comes on stage, they're going to support them. Mm. They're not going to be like, oh, you know, like proving. You know, we'd have a new band like Cliche. You don't even, probably don't remember them.
Oh,
right?
I do remember Cliche. Okay. Yeah.
Well, Cliche came and did a PA for us, and I'd go, introducing Cliche, and they get the best round of applause they've ever received because they've only just put the Hicks, people like the that, Hicks, you know.
Yeah.
There you go. Mm. So we even had Jay-Z at one of our fourth party.
Damn.
He did Hard Knock Life, and he did it at the Emporium, and no one knew he was there until I announced it.
Yeah.
Right? He was just raving on the dance floor. That guy looks American. And then all of a sudden I said, right, clear the dance floor because we didn't have a stage. All of a sudden the mic comes on. My mate turns the vinyl over and plays the instrumental Hard Knock Life. And Jay-Z's doing Hard Knock Life. And everyone's like, what the hell? And that was how it was. So we've done the MTV Awards. And I'm there and I'm thinking, okay, we've got the Honeys. And Puffy was there as well. And Puffy comes up to me and says, yo, because there's posters all over Dublin. Mm. Trevor Nelson, lit party, all over. It sold out, and it just said sold out. It sold out in like a week.
Yeah.
And so, and it was about, I can't remember, about 15 quid a ticket, if that.
Jesus.
And Buffy says to me, yo, I'm coming to your party tonight, man. Because he was doing a tour later that year, and he wanted to obviously get on stage and say hi, and, you know.
For sure. Everyone.
He was a salesman. So I said, come down, man. I'll make it nice. You maybe come on the mic. You have a laugh. He said, okay. And Mariah, I see Mariah. Mariah's with Jasmine, who's our news girl. And Jasmine's calling me. Mariah wants to come down to the party tonight. I'm like, yeah, let Mariah come. Mariah, we'll sort her out. And Mary's like, yo, Trevor, come to the party, man. Because, you know, and so some of them were saying to me, and then some of them were telling other people. And mate, I swear to you, to this day, I've not had an out-of-body experience like that. We got there. I remember I walked up on stage and the place went berserk because we were bigger in Ireland than we were even in England, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
the place went berserk. They wanted R&B. They wanted it so badly. It was the sexiest thing to them, you know? And I thought, wow, this is going off, man. And at that point, Puffy walked in and he saw the crowd going nuts. And he thought, I ain't missing out on this. He jumps on stage. I'm thinking, we've got no music ready, nothing.
Oh, what?
We've only got the Honeys music ready.
Oh, right? Right,
all we've got are Honeys. Yeah. So I'm going through my record box and I've pulled out Mo Money, Mo Problems and I've turned it over or whatever, I think on the instrumental side or something, or I don't know what I did, but I think me and Dodge were DJing, and I'm like, little scratch there. And he's like, he's turning back going with a mic because he's just addressing the crowd. He thought, sod this, let's do a PA. And it just went nuts. He did My Money, My Problems. Mariah then strolls in. She was a bit drunk. She went mad. Did Honey, Heartbreak, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And Missy Elliott rolls in.
Unreal.
She's a bitch and get your freak on a fire. Then Whitney and Bobby walk in. They didn't perform. To be fair, rest in peace, she wasn't, you know. But they stood on stage while we played My Love Is Your Love and the crowd sang it to her. And then I played Bobby Brown tune. Then TQ walked in, that was West Side. Yeah. And then Linda David Hall was there. He does Sexy Cinderella.
Yeah.
And then Mary just killed it with Real Love. And that was and we played the vinyl and then the Honeys came on.
Oh, no. And they must have just been like,
they did their set, but it was... I sat down at the end of the night, I looked at Dodge and I said, that's it. I'm giving up DJ now. I'm never going to do a club again.
Yeah.
We can't top this, mate. Anyone watching this can go on YouTube and just put the Dublin Hit Party in and see if I'm lying. It was incredible.
It's unreal.
And that was the moment I realized that, you know, they were so grateful of the outlet that we were giving them in the UK and Europe to sell their music and to give them a platform instead of what was happening before when they come over and they might get Top of the Pops. They were doing something they really wanted to do. At the time, Whitney and Mariah, you couldn't get them in the same room.
Yeah.
Because everyone was going, oh, Whitney, Mariah, yeah. Whitney. Yeah. And they were both doing, and not one of them got paid a penny.
That's crazy. Doing that. And Mary. They did it all. That's some nothing. Egos right there.
Every single Lick Party that I did, not one artist got paid a penny.
That's
we
crazy.
Never paid anybody anything because we never put their name on a flyer. You did it if you wanted to do it. And I think the crowd could see the love, you know, for what we were trying to do. And it was reciprocated because we were, it was beautiful, man. Yeah. Nothing beats the 90s. Nothing. Nothing. Dude, listen to me. I'm on this podcast because it's specifically 90s. Yeah. And I'm telling you now.
Nothing.
We thought this was going to last forever. Mm. Everybody thought it's going to get better.
Yeah.
It's not. Look at it today. And it's not just two old guys talking here.
Yeah.
There was nothing like that in existence today. Nothing. Not on that level.
Yeah. It was so vibrant, bro. Like, it just felt like there was new artists coming out. He's talked about Linda David Hall there. Rest in peace, man. I remember when I heard him, and that was this kind of weird patriotic side came out of me where I'm like, wow, this is ours. And he's come at a time when I can appreciate it. Like, Sade was older, you know, and I love Sade, but it wasn't my era. Lyndon David Hall coming out doing that. And I was like, wow. And it really got us, it repped for us, bro. And I appreciate you doing it because, well, everything you've done since, you know. So, yeah.
I've had a great ride, my friend. I've had a great time.
Did you know, I don't know, it's hard to answer, I suppose, but at that time, did you ever have a reflective period where you were like, Jesus, what we're doing right now is blazing a trail? Like, you were trailblazing. Did you ever have that?
I'm going to be honest with you, and this isn't bullshit. I always had total clarity as to what was going on. And that's because of the background behind the scenes. I didn't care about being on stage. I didn't care about being, you know, the only reason I probably looked like I was having a great time is because no one pays money to see someone who's introverted and shy.
Yeah.
So that's what I was naturally, an introvert and quite shy. But I realized from being a punter myself, I don't want to see a guy act. I first went up on stage at Kiss's launch in 1990.
Right.
And I was so nervous. There was 100,000 people at Highbury Fields for the week we launched. And I was on stage going like this and being nervous.
Yeah.
And I cringe at the thought of it. And I realized no one pays money. Well, no one comes to see anybody who dare to step on stage and act like they're nervous. You've got to own it. So you've got to own it.
Yeah.
So, but I always had clarity because of my upbringing in the industry. I've done every job from importing to club promotions to making the tea to all of that stuff, right?
Yeah,
and I knew what we needed. So I was like, this needs to be done. We need this. Mm. You know, we need this. It wasn't like, I need this. We need this. I ain't got no Instagram account in them days.
Yeah,
I've got no Twitter followers.
Yeah.
I'm not getting any free stuff. I'm getting free trainers. That's about it. No one's paying me for being me like today, right? So it's passion. The clarity was, if you ask me the flip of this, everyone watching this will think, damn, that guy had a good time. Actually, I didn't have a good time. The responsibility weighed so heavy on me at times that every time we did a Lick Party, I just wanted it to be finished. and everyone come out safely, because there was a lot of trouble in clubs in those days. And I wanted everyone to come out safely. I wanted the party to go well. I wanted the artists to enjoy it. I wanted the sound to sound good. I wanted it to look good on camera. There's a lot of stuff going on that it was all going to come back to me. Even though there's a lot of people helping, I'm the face. So
yeah. It
had to be squeaky clean. The reason you wanted to come was because you felt it was safe to come.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's be honest, a lot of black music clubs at the time were not safe to go to, right? Mm, so the pressure was quite heavy. And, you know, I'm doing 2 radio shows a week, 2 MTV shows a week. I did loads of other TV in between. I did 2 or 3 series on the BBC music series and documentaries. I was burnt out at times, mate. Totally burnt out and not really enjoying my life. But I was like, we need this.
Yeah.
And I'd rather me do it than someone else do it and abuse it. The people I saw around me at the time, you know, wanted to copy what they saw in the States. They wanted to be hip hop. And I didn't think that was the way to go. That's not how you're going to pull people in. Mm. Normal people in. Not people who are going to lose their identity. I'm talking about normal people. You can like R&B. You can like hip hop. You don't have to come from Compton. You don't have to talk like you're from Compton. You don't even have to look like you're from Compton. Yeah. You can just like the music unashamedly. You don't have to hide yourself. Come to my parties, be yourself. That's really important, because every time I went clubbing, I saw people trying to be something they weren't too much, losing themselves, losing their identity. That's why I played it straight. That's why I played it so straight and didn't try and overdress, didn't try and overstyle myself. It was not about me. And people get it now. At the time, I used to get criticized quite a bit of being, well, he's not really street enough, is he? He's not. Yeah, I got that accusation a lot, but I knew what I was doing. We're in Great Britain, bro.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. We're not in New York to break them down sometimes.
We're not in New York, but it was fine. And I had total clarity. I knew we'd be talking about the lick 20 years later. I knew we would. I knew we would.
Yeah.
Because I felt, is this going to happen again? Yeah. Is anyone going to give anyone the freedom? We tried to put the show terrestrial because Flavor was on Channel 4. Mm. But if you want my honest opinion, it was all right.
Yeah, it was all right. It was an avenue. It was a thing.
Right, but it was terrestrial and we weren't.
Yeah.
So it should have been better than our show.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But it wasn't. Mm. It wasn't better than our show.
Yeah, yeah. But the interviews alone, there was a lot of that. I wouldn't see these artists getting interviewed. And, you know, you could be a Lear fan or whatever, but your MTV, it was always American interviews and stuff like that.
Yo, what up, y'all? This is DJ Premier, and you're checking out the Crates 808 podcast. I put an S on it because there's more than one record in the crate, you know what I'm saying? So that's how we dig, that's how we play, and that's what real DJs do. You heard? That's why it goes down. We out ya.
What's interesting then, if you're going from that, and like, what's really inspirational, what you just said there, though, bro, like, it's the beauty of the music and having anyone listening to it. I did feel in the 90s, as it got bigger and bigger and bigger, you couldn't hold back the masses going to the underground clubs. When I ended up going to moving to London in 99, I was going straight to them underground clubs, and it was more mixed than I ever assumed it would be. And that's like the power of hip hop, right? And obviously, I mean, we've got to talk a bit about 90s hip hop as well. Like,
that's what I'm here for. Exactly. I'm here for that. You know I'm here for that. But
because obviously I think it all intertwines beautifully, and especially how I think that both genres, soul, R&B and hip hop, helped each other. You nailed it, bro. Like when they merged, it was a powerhouse. To this day, it's a powerhouse, you know?
You just have to look at the charts in the 90s and you'd be shocked at how many of your favorite tunes got walked into the top 10 of national charts, literally walked in to the top 10. Even I'm shocked. I did the R&B chart show for years on Radio 1, and I knew that it was a powerful show because it was nationwide and all the students at uni were listening to it and all the rest of it. But I didn't realise just how, because I didn't look at the chart, I looked at my chart.
Yeah.
I look back and I'm geez, things got walked into that top 10 that would not have done that 10 years before. And it's because all the kids were buying this stuff. And, you know, you know, it was indie pop. It was Blur, Oasis going off. And it was R&B and hip hop going off and dance music. They were the three genres that were killing it for young people. And amazing.
Yeah, amazing. Absolutely.
You didn't get any R&B artists performing at festivals. There was none of this, what you get today, what the kids get today. You go to a festival and you can see every sort of music. R&B, we didn't do festivals.
Yeah.
We didn't do festivals. You're crazy. All the kids now, they love a festival, you know? And we dressed different. Everyone dressed different. You could tell if someone's into hip hop from 100 yards. Rap fan.
Yeah.
R&B fan.
Yeah.
Reggae boy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Indie kid with his Parker on, yeah. Such and such. And everyone was, you know, recently it's just been straight jeans, skinny, an identikit look, you know. You might be able to tell by the hair what they like,
yeah,
but not by clothes so much, you know.
Yeah.
It was very tribal. Very tribal, those days. And hip-hop was, you know, was great.
I know, that's amazing. That's the thing. It's like, it was so tribal. And just then, if I was to say to you, like, 90s hip-hop, what are the first, like, records maybe that pop to your brain? Like, is there any that really just pop straight in there?
90s hip-hop, well, I mean, you can't not say Dre and Snoop. I mean, I think I was really excited when I heard Snoop. Was it Deep Cover?
Yeah.
The album he was on?
Yeah.
You know, 1-7 on that. When I heard his voice, whoa, who's that? Snoop's debut album was one of the most anticipated albums of all time. You know, that guy, I mean, the Snoop now and the Snoop then are like two different.
So
it's like an alien and someone else.
Yeah.
Snoop then, shit. He was like hanging on to every word, the flow, everything about the West Coast. Snoop and Dre, unbelievable. Dre's debut as well, unbelievable. And what a completely different sound to what I was brought up on, which was New York. I was totally East Coast, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, A Tribe Called Quest, though, was my band that cut through in the late 80s and smashed it in the early 90s. They're my favorite hip hop band, just because they're more, you know, the jazz in me.
That's it.
They're more jazzy. They're soulful, but they're jazzy. They're boom bap. They're just like Dilla Duck type thing, you know, the abstract, the production, where they found their samples, the flow, Fife, Trini, you know, just them two bouncing off each other was just masterful. And obviously, in New York, Biggie and Jay. I mean, I'm going to say the obvious ones. You've heard it a thousand times.
I want to hear it from you, though, because I'm not heard this, you know.
Okay, well, Tribe I really knew about, right? And I was a complete fan, complete disciple, right? Absolute disciple. I think I had Low End Theory in my car for a whole year in the CD player.
Well, let me ask you this before we move on then, right? Because you had that for a year, right, in your CD player. Yeah. Are you saying you go Low End Theory above Midnight Marauders?
100%. 100%.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you why.
Go on.
Right, let's not... I have this argument with so many friends. Midnight Marauders, bro. I'm like, no. It's the flow of Low End Theory for me. It's the jazz in Low End Theory.
Yeah.
It's Ron Carter. It's Ron Carter. It's the double bass. Right? It's Ron Carter. I've got Ron Carter jazz albums from before, and they got Ron Carter on the bass. And
that's it.
Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, man. Infectious.
Yo, microphone check. Oh, I mean, come on. Right?
Yeah.
I was listening to that every day driving to work, right? Driving across London. And I just, in the morning, it's just like, I was just going every tune.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's the best album. It just means it's my best album.
That's
it. But then when I heard Unbelievable Biggie, it's unbelievable. And the way they produced it, dun, 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 you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just like hip hop that I'd never heard before.
Yeah.
The production and his flow. I said, this dude, this guy. You know what I mean? Just like, and the production, it's the production, but Biggie, I just thought this guy is unique. He's amazing.
Amazing.
Jay-Z didn't give me chills like that off his first album, but I admit, I knew of him before, you know, done a bit before. He was great on that first album, but I can't say I was as excited. I was excited about the collaboration with Biggie on his album, and I loved it. Yeah, Can't Knock the Hustle. Of course, I love that. Ain't no player like, you know, Foxy.
Yeah.
Of course, because it's R&B in there as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But the album of all albums, the greatest debut hip-hop album of all time, period, is Nas, Illmatic. Just by a country mile, simply because if an alien landed from Mars on Earth and went, what is hip-hop? Instead of giving them an album full of collaborations, full of fancy production, full of this, full of that, and I wanted to give them something pure, I would just give him Nas Illmatic as a pure guy, just master of his craft, so young, poet, just beautiful, just from top to bottom, you just leave the album on.
Yeah.
He had a couple of collaborations on there, and that was it. AZ, couple of collaborations. Even today, you put that album on, it's beautiful. It's just, he was never going to top that.
Yeah. It's true.
He was never going to top that. It was that good. Even when Jay-Z beefed with him, he had to just say, okay, you have one classic album. You know what I mean? I got three or whatever he said.
Yeah.
But that classic's better than
all that.
Any of them,
all that, yeah, exactly.
It's the one. And I know it's tough to debate, but for me. So they're probably the main ones. Mm. But I'm going to throw another one in. Not as an album, but excitement as an artist coming out. He started off in Leaders of the New School.
Oh.
And honestly, you know, that thing about hearing somebody you ain't heard before? When I heard Busta Rhymes, Leaders of the New School, Charlie Brown and all them, I'm like,
what?
Like, you know, what's going on here?
Yeah, yeah.
And then when I heard him on Scenario, he killed it. And when I'm telling you that Tribe are my favourite hip-hop band, and I love the flow between Five, Q-Tip, if you go and see Q-Tip live and his mic's not turned up, it's like, I can't hear you, bro.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, the sound had to be perfect when you go to a Tribe gig. And sometimes I went and I didn't think it was, but when it was perfect, they were great. Busta Rhymes on Scenario destroyed that tune.
He did.
Just someone threw a Molotov cocktail in the mix and just blew it up. And everyone went, when is this guy releasing the debut album? And he released it. And unfortunately, I don't think Busta's given us a classic album, a real classic album. There's moments on the Extinction Level, there's, you know.
Yeah.
But when he came out, and if you've ever seen him perform in his heyday.
I have, yeah.
I went to Madison Square once, right?
Oof.
And they used to be Budweiser Fests. And they, you know, Madison Square used to have, I went there twice to see everyone.
Yeah.
They were all on the bill. They're all of them. And he had the smallest, he just came on. He didn't have a backdrop as much as the rest of them. He didn't have a stage show. It was just Busta. He was like Tina Turner. You know, like Tina Turner eats up the stage.
Yeah.
Beyonce eats up the stage, up and down the stage and dances like, man. He was just all in locks going everywhere crazy.
Yeah.
Madison Square going off. When he did Woo-Ha, Put Your Hands, it went off in there and I was just jumping up and down like a little kid. And then he just stormed the stage and went off. And that's why I think that's the kind of character we miss in hip-hop today.
Mm.
We miss that guy. I mean, a lot of rappers run around going, energy, 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 and all this stuff.
It's like, where's your energy?
Where's your energy? Wait, stop relying on the crowd. You know, too many artists today rely on the crowd. You go and see a gig today, the crowd are singing every word, and I'm paying money, you entertain me.
Yeah.
You know, there's too much this call and response stuff going, too much.
Yeah.
You entertain me, and Busta Rhymes was one of those guys who...
He
was in his pump. He was phenomenal.
Yeah.
He wasn't shy. He wasn't shy. He wasn't that cliche, actually. A lot of rappers became very cliche, just grabbing their crutch and walking up and down.
Yeah.
Busta didn't care.
Yeah.
He didn't care.
It's so true. Trevor, I'm loving all this energy. I'm loving it, man. I want to smash something.
I can't help it. I'm getting excited talking about it. I'm genuinely, it's memories. It's memories. You know what I mean? And I mean, people say don't look back, but it's hard when you grew up, grew your kahunas in the 90s, man.
Yeah.
When you lost your virginity musically in the 90s properly, you know. And that's why whenever I meet people like yourself, they're so passionate. I still do old school raves. And I don't care to do raves, but I do them because people want them.
Yeah.
And they want to be thrown back into the 90s and noughties because they definitely the best era.
The music was amazing.
Hey guys, this is Jerobi from A Tribe Called Quest. You're listening to the Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo, what's up, man? It's your man El Zai, and you're rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast. You know what I'm saying? Where you can check out, you know, artists like me.
Hey, it's Steve Rifkin from Loud Records. You're rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast. Spread the word. These guys are dope. The questions they ask and the interview is amazing. Enjoy yourself. Be safe and be healthy.
1212, you know what it is. This your man SKYZOO Sky Zoo, live out the borough. And this is the Crate 808 Podcast. Make sure you subscribe, rate, review, and most importantly, share that love and put your peoples on.
Peace and light. This is Cy-Rock, rocking with Crate 808 Podcast. And you want to check out everything hip hop on crate808.com.
Yo, this is Juggernaut, Nottingham City, NG area. You're rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast. Make sure you keep it locked in. There's so many gems drop. Crate808.com.
Hey, yo, this is the one and only R.A., the Rugged Man. And I'm rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast with my man Cam. Yeah.
when you're DJing these raves then, or you're DJing at any nights you're doing or festivals or whatever, are there any mainstays from the hip hop catalog that you just kind of know that's going to work?
I mean, of course. It depends what the crowd is, though.
For sure.
Because if I don't do that many festivals, but if the more generic, the more mainstream you go, the more you can't go deep, you've got to do things that relate to the crowd. I mean, gosh.
What are you looking at? You reckon you get away with a number one hit from the 80s? Something like that, like a De La Soul or something.
Oh, yeah. You can get festivals. Love De La Soul. Come on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. True. It's
Love De La Soul. Freeze a Magic Number has been played at festivals even when we weren't playing it, you know?
Yeah, true.
I mean, in an R&B night, I mean, I do a lot of old school raves. And because my raves are very mixed age-wise and male-female, slightly erring more on the female side, like, fellas. So if you're still not married or attached, or you
get down there, singles night.
So in fairness, people see me as someone who plays girly hip hop. I know why people see me. Do you know what I mean? But we lost a king of the party bangers, which is DMX recently. And honestly, that guy was like Rough Riders anthem. Girls and guys. Oh, shit. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That guy had more. I played Slippin', actually, on my old school show the other day as a tribute to him, because he died the same weekend as the Duke of Edinburgh. So we didn't get a chance to be on the radio that weekend, which was really unfortunate. But I played Slippin' and I said, DJ should pay his estate royalties for how many times he got us out of jail on the dance floor.
Yeah.
There were about 3, 4, 5 DMX tunes that you go to. And that's one, he's one of the go to guys. Up in here. I mean,
yeah, that face says it all.
I just said that you've got to do the work, not the crowd. But when it came to DMX's songs, the crowd did the work for you.
Yeah, that's
it. I mean, you had to drop the volume up in here, And you find out, and the thing about these tunes, the thing I liked about these tunes, you find out who's in the house when you play a tune like that. So if you're looking at the crowd, you're thinking, are there some real heads in there I don't know?
Yeah.
Play that tune, everyone's seeing it, you know where you can go next. You know, instead of just playing Mace Feel So Good, you can go a bit harder, you know?
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so these are a little bit more quick fire, 90s, more 90s hip-hop stuff, but, you know, take it where you want to go, bro. Some of these you actually probably maybe already answered, but if there was a 90s act that the culture needs right now, or the music or the industry needs right now, who you got?
It's a brand new Busta Rhymes artist. It's someone like Busta. It's someone with the energy, the craft, daring, the eat the stage up mentality, the entertainer. We need entertainers. I think too many people sound good, good on record and not so good live. And what I mean by that is performance-wise. I mean, hip-hop has suffered from that a lot over the years, that people couldn't take what they do on record in the studio on stage. They're too cool for school, so you're not getting that entertainment value. I got sick of going to hip-hop gigs when 5 rappers are just 3 hype men and 2 main rappers just running up and down the stage, making noise, and it sounds nothing like the record. I got sick of that after a while. I wanted my money back. How many times have you been to a concert and you've left today? Well, they did the whole albums, but... Now, if you're asking me out of 10, that's a 6. I saw Kanye West on tour and I went, that's different because of the stage show.
That's a show. Yeah.
Just when his mum passed away, just after his mum passed away, he went on tour. That was a stage show. I remember P. Diddy tweeted, I've just fallen in love with hip hop again, just seeing Kanye. And, you know, no one puts him down as one of the greatest rappers of all time, but he knows that. He put a show on. And I just think we need showmen. We need some more showmen. And I really think we do, so I say Busta.
Okay, love that. I'm here with you with that. What are the things you don't miss from the 90s?
One person I haven't mentioned, a lot of people will probably get a crossbow out and aim it to my temple for not mentioning Tupac.
Yes.
Right? The one thing I don't miss is that. What I mean by that is hugely talented guy, incredible artist, incredible. Hated when he was angry. I hated when he was angry with Biggie. I just hated it. I didn't enjoy that beef. I didn't love that beef at all. People, that beef's gone down in history. That beef is now folklore. You know, people have made money off that beef. People have made documentaries. I don't get off on it because I don't know if it was real. And what I mean by real, I genuinely think, my opinion, Biggie didn't have nothing to do with it. That's my opinion. Biggie didn't want anything to do with the beef. The beef was brought to Biggie. You know what I mean? That's how I feel. That's just my theory. I weren't there, so I don't know. But the way Pop wrote it out in the media, really not good for hip hop deep down. It wasn't, because we lost two greats.
Yeah.
We lost two greats in the end. And I hated seeing him spit venom. I remember going in a record shop and he was on that Machiavelli vibe. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I remember being in the record shop at this time and I was getting my weekly fix of tunes. My man behind the counter said, "Oh shit, wait till you hear this." And he put Hit 'Em Up on.
Oh my Lord. In the record shop?
Yeah. And we stood there and there was guys going, "Oh yeah, yeah, shit, tell him, Pop, tell him, and all this shit. Yeah. I fucked your wife." When I heard that, F Bad Boy, F Little C's, F did a Little Kim, there was, you know, like, a few years back, KRS-One, I think it was Coogee Rap, had a great beef. The bridge is over. Bye-bye. You know what I mean? And all that stuff. Dun, dun, dun. Wicked. Right? You know what I mean? Yeah. That's hip-hop. That's beef.
Yeah.
This was way too personal, way too, you got to do something about it. You know, way too, what are you coming back with? This guy's basically saying, get ready, get your Glocks out. You know what I mean? I'm coming for you and stuff. And I didn't like the fact that was a bad route because everyone was making hay out of that beef. Everyone was enjoying it. Everyone was loving it. At the time, hip hop was getting a bad rep in America. They were trying to censor it. There was all that censorship going on, you know. Everyone was getting involved. Reagan and his wife had done their turn already on it.
Yeah.
Stuff, X, Y, Z. And he just gave them food. I know he was feeling it. I know he's a passionate guy and he was a passionate guy and he said what he meant. And he was, and a lot of people say, arguably, he's the greatest of all time, Tupac. But that moment there, when I stood in that record shop, I knew we were doomed. I knew. When I heard that tune, I had never played that tune. I think I might have played that tune once in a club, begrudgingly. Yeah. I didn't like that tune.
Yeah.
I loved the beat. I loved the venom, but it was about something else. I knew. So I don't miss that about the 90s. And I think the beef got too serious. East Coast, West Coast should have been a musical beef.
Yes.
100%. And then when you get Suge Knight having a pop at Puffy, don't get me wrong, I'm not up Puffy's ass. You know, Puffy times made me squirm a lot of times in the 90s.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But Jill called him out as well. You know, it's just got nasty.
Yeah.
You know, I remember going bad. I remember seeing a few conventions in the States and I remember seeing Puffy walking around with zillions of bodyguards. You know, I thought,
what a life. Right. Yeah.
That ain't right. You know what I mean? And then you had the roots just chilling over there and you had New Edition reformed that week, I remember, and they were over there. And I got in on a pass because I was in a record label, so I got in there and I saw this. I see Puffy walk around with loads of, it's horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible. So we don't miss that.
Trevor, I understand that completely. And I appreciate you bringing that because the 90s ain't all, it isn't all just roses. Do you know what I mean? Like there were some real dark moments as well we had to go through.
Very dark. We lost two greats.
Yeah.
Place of no time. You know, two greats. I mean, we're not talking about, you know what I mean? We're not talking about a couple of rappers.
Yeah.
We're talking about the two biggest rappers at their peak. They didn't get to 30.
That's crazy.
One of them only made two albums.
Yeah. I mean, I know.
You know what I mean? And everyone's made money off them since they died. You know, they didn't even reap the rewards of their talent. You know, it's a disaster for hip hop.
On a sidetrack, though, on that, you know, you said they were in their 30s. And I mean, that's just really sad. And there has been a whole flood of younger rappers passing in the recent years. But like, for me, it's stuff like, you know, when DMX has gone and recently Shock G left us and a lot of these. They're not old. They're like middle-aged rappers and middle-aged artists.
I think the game is tough on rappers. I think you've got to understand, being around a lot of artists in my lifetime and seeing them at their peak and seeing how they carry themselves and seeing the pressure they're under to live to a stereotype, you've got to remember there was a lot of pressure on everyone spending a lot of money, blinging, flossing, whatever you want to call it, spending more money, more cash than they really should have, you know, when really... There's a way other artists, you look at other artists, and I always say this to people. Don't think Noel Gallagher don't like money in Oasis because he's wearing a parka and looks like he's living in a council flat in his video. Because Biggie's on a yacht and he's surrounded by girls and he's got diamonds all around him. Don't think they don't equally like money the same. It's just the pressure of hip-hop was to project that image, whereas with rock, you project a completely different image, an indie. You know what I mean? And,
yeah.
And to burn through your cash trying to live up to the hype,
yeah,
being a rap star. And then you've got there's loads of pressures. There's loads of different pressures. And a lot of them, I think, would have done it so differently now. So insects of depression or habit. Or, you know, it's about being a has-been. And then then people started, you go on YouTube and you see 20 broke rappers, the most broke rappers of all time.
Yeah.
They do it with black athletes in America, black athletes, and they do it with black artists all the time.
Mm.
And all you see is a list and it's, oh, ain't it funny? Ja Rule, Cisco, or someone else who's, you know, spunked a load of money. And it's just, it depresses me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that came from 90s excess and people thinking they've got to live up to the stereotype.
Yeah.
You know, that's the downside of our game.
Fascinating point, though, because you have to remember these artists and this culture come from somewhere that isn't used to having these. They have aspirations, but it's that money isn't going into that community. And whilst we're here, big up on your community work as well, because I feel it's absolutely crucial to have people like yourself still diving in and doing that. But yeah, right. So a few more I've got here.
One more thing before you go.
Absolutely, you Trevor. Go on. Yeah, Trevor, go on.
You love the MTV days.
I do.
I love the MTV days. And we all loved a show that is partly responsible for this, MTV Cribs. But this is why half of them ain't got any money. Mm. Because that was MTV Cribs is exactly what I'm... See how you the joy it brought to your face when I said it?
Yeah.
And a lot of people watching will go, oh, yeah, I loved MTV Cribs.
Mm.
Some of them faked it, obviously. It wasn't their real homes.
Yeah.
But a lot of it was their real homes. Mm. And the moment your next album comes out and it ain't selling, you got to sell that crib that you've made bespoke to your liking, which you're going to end up selling for half the price. I know I'm being cynical about this.
No, you're right, though. And that's the industry. And that's why I think the passing on of knowledge is so crucial. You know, be it in workshops, be it in seminars, be it whatever, you know, TED Talks. I'm waiting for the Trevor Nelson TED Talk. We need that.
Not me, mate. They asked me to do one when I lived in Muswell Hill and I said, hell no.
Oh, man, I'd like to see that.
I said, no way. I'm not doing that. I did one for Touch Magazine sort of thing, but I wish back on it with cars and I look back in it and I wish I didn't do it.
Oh.
I didn't do it in the house, but I had a few cars at the time and I went, no, I shouldn't do that.
Okay.
Because youngsters, you know, we still have that problem. We still have that problem in society where, you know, people live beyond their means. It's just a problem. It's something that's part of our culture.
Yeah.
You know, both, you know, black and Asian. Let's be fair about it.
Yeah.
Everyone, you know, it's just with us. We just, you know, it's that need to be flashy, you know, and feel worthy of something. You know that, you know.
Yeah, I know where you're going. I know.
Hey, yo, this your boy Pharrell March, and right now, you are rocking live with the Crate 808 Podcast. Enjoy this week's episode, and just remember to subscribe and rate and review. Peace.
Okay, so if you could be a fly on the wall, right, any 90s studio session, hip-hop studio session, which one would you want to be in and why?
Very easy. I call it, she's in the category of hip-hop. Definitely, but she's more R&B, but she is unique. Lauryn Hill, Miss Education of Lauryn Hill.
Beautiful.
I mean, beyond beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, that there, if you're just going to do one album, do that album. because someone sent her on earth to make a record like that.
Mm.
And wow, I mean, she was everything to me. Like everything as an, I mean, Yes, I interviewed just everyone.
Mm-mm.
And I never woke up in the morning thinking, oh God, I've got to interview this person and they've got 20 people entourage and I've got to get through all that. And I'm not mentioning any names. There were about a few of them like that, right?
Yeah.
Most of the time I woke up thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to be talking to, and I've got to ask them this and I've got to ask them that, you know?
Mm-mm-mm.
Lauryn Hill was my favorite musically of all of them, male or female. Lauryn Hill was unique. She just the voice. I've never heard a voice like that. I've never quite heard a voice quite like hers. If you listen to the Fugees album Zealots, that track Zealots rather on the score, she comes on.
Yeah.
She comes in, it's just beautiful. Obviously, the big hits Killing Me Softly, Ready or Not. We know about that. The hype on that album was insane. And then she gave us Doo Wop, which was the party tune, which was unique. Never heard a tune like that before either.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Doo Wop, that thing. Never heard a tune like that again since or before. She gave us Lost Ones. It's funny how money changes situations.
Yeah.
Communicate. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. This young lad run like, you know.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
She gave us, for me, you know, my favorite track on that album, Zion.
Yeah.
Zion is with Carlos Santana. It's just, that's what I'm saying. Carlos Santana, legendary guitarist, Lauryn Hill. Then the hook up with D'Angelo. Then X Factor. I genuinely think, you know when people say goosebumps in the recording studio, I'd have leprosy by this time.
You just,
you know what I mean? I'd have huge bumps all over my face because she was definitely burning incense.
Yeah.
And drinking honey and hot
herbal teas.
I've seen her in action. She once did a she came to Radio One and I had them in when they did Killing Me Softly, when they were at the peak, and we did a little session. This wasn't a live, before the live lounge. This was just called a smoking room session. I said, you've got to do a cover of a song. Said, I've got one in mind. I'm gonna go in there. And it's just me, her, Pras and Wyclef, and I'm sitting there.
Right.
I'm just enjoying every moment because the Fugees were the shit for me at the time. You know, me being on radio, that's tools. Yeah. That's tools. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's like the third week I was on Radio One, I played Killing Me Softly. Like, it was the third week that tune come out.
Damn.
And I just had that weapon, you know? And it's for them because I was new. And they're thinking, what's he bringing? And I had the Fugees, so I'm playing Killing Me Softly. You need to play this. And so we're in the studio and my favorite line of any song, you're probably not, I doubt you know this song, it's by Sam, you might do, Sam Cooke, A Change Is Gonna Come.
Yeah, I love it, yeah.
Sorry, I'm disrespecting you.
No, Trev, I love it, it's fine.
First line of that song is my favorite opening line of any song ever written. I was born by the river in a little tent, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. That tune, through civil rights, through, you know, it just, any form of slavery, any form of, yeah, it just is powerful, that line. As long as it's not telling what she's going to do, she has no idea that's my favourite song, favourite line rather, not the favourite song. She goes into the booth and we're sitting there kicking it for like 3 hours. I'm just sitting there, do you want me to go and get you some honey? Do you want me to get you anything, right? And she's like, yeah, so they've done their version of Killing Me Softly, all stripped down. Clef's on the guitar. He's like, yeah, yeah. You ready, Lauren? You ready, Lauren? And then she goes in the studio. Yeah, yeah. One time. And she sings, I Was Born. She starts singing that song and he's drumming guitar. I was born by the river.
Oh.
And she came, little tent, to I Was Born by the River in a tenement, like a tenement block in New York or wherever, New Jersey. Whatever. I think she said, my mom was so poor, she couldn't afford the rent. It's been a long time coming, but no change is going to come. Dude, I nearly cried. I sat there and I nearly cried.
Oh, look at that.
Thank you. This is a Lauryn Hill love in my... Hey,
yeah,
bro,
I see.
Let me take you around.
I see this. Oh, look at that.
That's a one-off picture from a photo shoot.
I love that.
Right? One-off picture.
Yes. Yes,
that's
bro. Oh, go on. What, that's it, right. Mate.
That's,
come on.
Debut album, Sade.
Oh, stop it, Trevor. This is, oh, man.
Jasmine, Guru signed up for me. We did that album called Tempo.
That is sick. That is sick.
Monk, Thelonious Brown. I'm showing off now.
Mate, right. Brown. I'm seeing Brown Sugar there as well.
Yes, Diana Ross.
Diana Ross. Unbelievable.
Destiny's Child, Erica,
Jesus,
Mary Kay, Brandy, Lauren, Amy,
Kevin,
yep.
Oh man, Mariah.
I'm definitely showing off now. Your favourite?
What's this one? Lick. Oh, the Lick. Look at that. Yeah,
we did the Lick Awards.
Yes.
Yeah, man.
Trevor, all I need to see. This is the legendary status, though. Like that, just having that around you must make you feel like, damn, I've done all right, you know.
Yeah, no, they. To be fair, I didn't make those records, did I? They sort of just because we gave them an opportunity on MTV and Radio One. So thankful that someone was doing something nationally, you know,
yeah,
with their music. doing sessions and stuff. It was,
yeah,
it was, you know, I feel humble, but it's just in my little office. It's not, no one gets in here. So it's just for me, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But love breeds love, Trevor. I think love breeds love, man. And the fact that you shared it, yeah, comes back. Amazing. Comes back. Amazing.
It's one of the great tragedies of music that she didn't make more.
Yeah.
It really is.
Absolutely. Well, actually, you know, just on that then, just to round this off, because I just wanted to see where you were at this moment, like in your life, like your career's been spanning all these decades and all these artists. And we can talk about all that. But one question for you really is like, what for you now defines success? What do you do now? That
for an artist or for people?
For yourself.
For myself. I'm done, mate.
Yeah, you're good. You're good now.
I'm fulfilled. No, honestly, I think I don't care what people think of me, right?
Mm.
If you're of a certain age, you probably appreciate what my era of DJs did.
Mm.
We were specialists before streaming, and we were, you know, you hung on to every word. Mm. When's it coming out? The release date.
Yeah.
I know what's going on. People tape cassettes, recording your show, recording your TV show and VHS.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. And I get it, because I was one of them, you know, and that was never lost on me. So now I think it's very difficult for DJs to achieve anything like that, because when a tune comes out, it's available everywhere. You've got no time with that. You've got no time yourself with that to be a specialist, to be a gatekeeper or any of that stuff anymore. Yeah, you can have a special show. You can do sessions. You can do, you know, like Charlie Sloth would do Fire in the Booth.
Yeah.
That's how he does his thing. Mm. You know, someone else does, you know, you can do something that's unique to what you, and that's how you become a specialist. But it's very hard to just play music unless it's obscure, unless it's really obscure and be a specialist. So for me, I'm done. In that respect, I'm just enjoying doing radio and reflecting back on what I did and what the music I played, rather than obsessed with what's out there today.
Mm.
I cherry pick what's out there today for my audience that I play for. And I'm still on One Extra, and I do an old school show with music that you remember mainly from the 90s and noughties.
Mm-hmm.
It's an easy listen, really easy listen.
It's a lovely listen, man.
It's an easy listen, you know, and I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. Just trying to remind you, there's always a tune or two on that show that you go,
Do you know what that was? Do you know what that was for me the other day? Is when you dropped Zealots, bro. I was like, listening, and you're getting all this, you know what you're getting used to. Then Zealots come. This is a deep album cut. What the hell?
Well, people got, you know, you forget about tunes like that sometimes, you know, and I do sometimes too. And you know, you only need to play one or two a show
that.
Because the rest is just sing along, you know. You fit. You just cool. And you go,
I forgot about that.
And I'm of an age now where I'm on radio too, and I'm having the time of my life on radio too. I'm talking to people who were there, but I'm not. It's not R&B and hip hop. This flex of it. It's much broader, and it's music I never got a chance to play that I have collected over the years, and it's not always all quote unquote the R&B hip hop thing. I'll play something a little left, but I'm always playing to the audience. I think the mistake a lot of DJs make is they end up on a radio station and they try and do them, and it's not what the audience want. You do a radio station, you have to play to your audience.
Yeah.
If you go, for example, if I said to you, can you DJ at my sister's wedding? You ain't going to bring a 90s hip hop set, are you? Right? You're just not.
Yeah.
You can step in a few, but you're not going to bring an 80s hip hop set, because you know, apart from the core of her friends being there, there's aunties, uncles, cousins, mums and dads.
Yeah.
So you got, it's harder to get that right than it is to play in a normal club, right?
Yeah.
That's my thought process. When I did One Extra, it was a younger crowd than I was used to when I was doing daytime on One Extra. I had to switch up a bit and you know, allow myself to be playlisted for the first time quite a bit and play tunes that I probably wouldn't have chosen, but still keep my mark with Album for Life, feature on an album, do some feature. You know what I mean? Still keep your identity. And I'm having a great time, man, on two. And I'm having a great time doing old school gigs, actually.
Oh, wicked.
They're always sold out. The people still want it. It's amazing seeing people's, like, listen, I do gigs now to people who look like you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Got the odd fleck of grey coming up there. You know what I mean? Shaving the hair before the hairline goes.
Trev, you've had it for a long time, but you were right all that time ago.
Clean up the ghetto, bruv. Clean up the ghetto. And you know what? I'm having the best time.
That's wicked.
Because I don't feel competitive. I think the one thing about the 90s, I will say, is that the competitive nature that I was talking about, Tupac and Biggie, that whole thing and that West Coast, East Coast, and everyone thinking, yeah, I've got to be competitive, was the same with DJing, same with club promoters, same with everybody was quite competitive. Yeah. There was love for the music. You could tell there's an edge. Yeah. You turn up at a gig and the DJ before you is rinsing every track, you know, before you come on. Yeah. It's all selfish rather than for the crowd, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't miss those days.
Yeah.
I don't miss those days at all, mate. I like where I look back and I think once in a while on a Sunday, I just play an album.
Yeah.
And I only pick the ones you can play from top to bottom without jumping tracks. That's why Nas is wee.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm into album listening now as well. On a Sunday, chill out, just listen to one album, top to back. Yeah, I think there's something in that, man.
How hard is that to do? How many albums do you know that you can do that with?
Not easy, bro. Very, very hard. I can't think of many, but yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad that you're there and you're passing on this knowledge with other people. And yeah, just keep doing you, man. Just keep doing it. Keep smashing it.
You keep doing your podcast, man. And this great thing, man. It's just great. I mean, you've had some great guests.
Thank you.
You've had some great guests. You've had some unsung heroes of the industry on this show.
I'm glad that you've cottoned onto that, because your Pharaoh Munches deserve that love, you know?
Absolute G. Push, dude, I played Push on Radio 2.
Oh.
But you see, because listen to the construction of that song, the way it is and about it. It's immature from the time he made it.
Yes.
From the time he made it, it was like timeless. It's one of them timeless tunes he made. He was one of the underrated rappers of the game. It's like great.
Yeah. And that's what I love. I love that. Actually, another thing I want to big you up for before we go, I was listening to some of your interviews you'd done the back of the day, and you'd done Beyonce and Aaliyah and all this. Yeah. And you were talking to Beyonce in one of them about, and I'm not a Beyonce fan really, but my missus loves her music, loves her shows. So I hear it now and again, and I appreciate the musicality of it, but I don't really dig deep into the musicality. And you were there talking to her and she was using horns on some new tracks at that time. And I was like, you know what? The musicality of someone like Beyonce is something I'd like to just actually check out. I shouldn't be saying this on the pod because people could probably leave. But honestly, I didn't even know that she'd done like a Fela Kuti tribute album that she'd never released and stuff like that. And I was like, sometimes I think we're very quick to judge, and it takes an interview like you did with her that makes me think differently a bit more about that pop. She's a pop star. She's world.
Will.i.am's a pop star. Will.i.am's a pop star.
There you go.
People say, Will.i.am a rapper or a pop star? Well, if you've got early Black Eyed Peas, you'll know that he loves Tribe Called Quest and acts like that, right? Before they went all electronic and obsessed with electronica.
Yeah.
And Will.i.am one day's at the MTV Awards. I remember when he was at his peak as a producer. Mm. And backstage, I can give you a snapshot, right? What it's like backstage when you've got, I remember Timbaland being backstage once, Will.i.am being backstage once. Mm. The amount of people, top artists that hover around their dressing room is scandalous.
Are you serious? Wow.
Scandalous, my friend, right?
Wow.
Seriously, you've got to see it. You've got to see it because, listen, normally these hookups are made like by A&Rs, by record companies, picking up the phone to her, can we get Will.i.am on the new album? Can we get him to be, how much is your track? 100,000? Okay, yeah. Can you just do this track? It could be the lead single. Royalty rate will be this, blah, blah, blah. But it's nothing better than an artist seeing a producer, especially in those days, and going, yo, Timbo, hey, my name is such and such. I know who you are. You know, you've been double platinum twice. But yeah, but I can't get you. And I'm like, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, and then they hook up like that. Well, Will.i.am was like that. He was backstage and everyone was on him. And I remember him turning to me and going, yo, I know you're going to appreciate this. I'm doing the new Sergio Mendes album. I'm redoing Sergio. Because Sergio Mendes, it's a Brazilian artist from the 60s. Love his stuff, jazz. Remember I said I like jazz and Latin and all that? And he was getting off on doing the Sergio Mendes. But it's not going to sell. It's not going to sell.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He's got a queue of A-list pop stars at his door wanting him to, you know, going to give him another million for doing the tune. And all he wants to tell me about is, yo, you're going to dig it, right? And, you know, he's just a fan. He's a fan of the music. And this is what I love seeing. You know what I mean? And that's why, you know, people see him as just a pop. No, there's more to people like him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He balances it up. He'd do a cheesy pop smash so he can get the money to do and pursue a passion of Latin jazz.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
So yeah, maybe, you know, some of the more blinkered listeners that used to be me, you know, just sometimes it's nice to see these little, you know, just rabbit holes these people go down and take you on. And Pharrell's another one. Pharrell's another one. He's going into some electronica, soul, funk. I love it. I love that.
I think overall, as an R&B guy at heart, he's my favorite producer just because, I mean, sometimes it got formulaic. You could hear a Neptune production from a mile away. But, you know, I once sat down with him and I said, we did a big thing on the lick. You might have seen the interview. We had a big thing with Pharrell. Mm. And I just said straight, I said, dude, I hate NSYNC. Right? You made me play NSYNC. You made me play a tune called Girlfriend. You made me carry it around in my box. You made me carry that around and play it, right, everywhere I went because everyone wanted it.
Mm.
And it's a banging R&B tune.
It's true.
And he was playing it cool. He's like, nah. I said, no, I don't like NSYNC. I said, I don't like NSYNC. And you made me play this, right?
Yeah.
And then obviously then Justin's album came out.
Justified.
And the big thing was Timbaland and Pharrell did the whole album. Whatever you think of that album, I put it up there, right? I think it's great. And then I put it to him. I heard you wanted to do Michael Jackson's album, right? That was a big rumor at the time. These tracks were for Michael Jackson that you had. Like, I Love You from Michael.
Yeah.
Think about that album. A lot of the tracks in that album sounds Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Michael didn't want them. Michael said he settled on, what's his name?
Dark Child?
Rodney Jerkins.
Yeah.
He had already committed to Rodney Jerkins. And the problem that Michael Jackson had at the time, he used to take time to make his albums.
Mm.
And the pace, the R&B and hip hop, if you look at it, Whitney did an R&B album, It's Not Right, It's Okay, and all that, My Love Is Your Love, and all that. Mariah went straight R&B with Butterfly.
Yeah.
Straight R&B. Get the pop, straight R&B.
Just R&B,
and
yeah.
Michael, the superstar of them all, you know, career was coming down a bit. It was really important who he got to produce. Timbaland and Pharrell would have killed it for him.
Unreal.
And he settled on Rodney Jerkins. And by the time it came out, Rodney Jerkins was yesterday's man almost.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. And Pharrell said straight up, I ain't going to lie, I was devastated that he didn't want me to do tracks on the album. He literally said devastated. And Justin got the best of them because they didn't want it. And it launched Justin as a solo artist. You know, it's just interesting.
Yeah.
And when you see the backstories, it's really interesting. And he was so honest about it. The controversy over Michael Jackson lives on, we know.
Yeah.
But an artist, they would have killed it with him.
Just imagine. They did it for Jigga, they did it for everyone, man. So, yeah.
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 Unbelievable. Those two are giants of production. I mean, we could talk for hours, bro, about producers. We didn't even talk, you know, producers became the kings. They became bigger than the artists. I think in years gone by, no one talked about producers.
Mm.
They always talked about the artists, and behind every artist was a great producer in the 80s and 70s. All right, a few genres, you know, Giorgio Moroder or whatever for disco and people like that. But in the 90s, that's when the producer became Dre. Even though Puffy didn't do some of them, but he did most of them. You know what I mean?
But he was his name.
He's up there. Puffy, Dre, you know. Those guys were huge. Timbaland.
Primo as well, though. Primo was...
Plastic.
Yeah.
And pure. Primo was pure.
Yeah.
Scratching everything, just pure.
Yeah.
Swiss beats banging, you know.
Yeah.
There's so many. Who was the piano man that Timbo used to call Piano Man?
Scott Storch.
Piano.
Well, yeah, Scott. Come on. The keys. He loves his keys.
Up and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many of these producers and track masters. There's so many. And we as DJs were like, who produced it before we heard the record? It was like, you go in a record shop, who's produced it?
Yeah.
Who's produced it? Don't care who the act is, who's produced it? Who's a producer? It was about that for DJs.
Yeah.
DJs knew if it's a Timbaland production, you either say, I hate Timbaland production, or you loved it.
Mm.
Neptune, put it in my bag. I don't just put it in my bag.
Yeah.
I don't need to say that. Put it in my bag. Timbaland, put it in my bag. You know, it was like that.
Yeah.
Just put it in my bag. Just put it in my bag. I'll get excited at home on my own to that. I'll turn it over. I listen to the instrumental. I use the instrumental for a bed on my radio show. I'll mix it with, you know.
Yeah.
And they were killing it.
Yeah.
Absolutely killing it. And they were carrying some artists.
Yes, absolutely worth. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So today must be pretty similar because I don't even know who's producing what today.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I'm more underground. So I don't know if you like Madlib or Alchemist, people like that.
Yeah.
They do their thing. Madlib loves his off-kilter bass, like the bossa nova stuff. I love that. So yeah, I think it's the producer is still held very highly today. And you're right, man. The 90s, we just had that. We just had that. And do you know what's been really lovely about this whole chat with you, Trevor, man, is your love for it. It's come through all of this ups and downs and career tribulations and heights. And man, the fact that you love this still.
I'm concerned that you thought I weren't in love with it at the time. I'm concerned that I'd be a fake and a fraud if I didn't love it. Right?
No, it's true. But I'm saying after time.
It makes me love it. Yeah.
After all this time, the love is still there. It makes me feel like, yeah, man, you can still become that little kid again. You know, that excitement. Yeah.
I don't play music at home.
Oh, really?
I don't play music in the car. I don't play it at home. Mm. I have thousands of records and CDs, but I have to, because I still do shows, I only play them when I'm compiling a show. I do play music at home when I'm getting a show together, sure. But only one on a Sunday I might play music, because the only way to stay, even when I'm doing a gig, in a year and a bit, I've not touched my CDJs.
Wow.
While lockdown, you know, not once. I haven't touched my CDJs. Wow. I don't even know if I can still touch. But it's because my appetite for it, I've got to keep it, you know, I've just got to keep, I get excited when I'm there. When I'm on the show, I get excited when I'm in the club. I don't want to I overdid it.
Yeah.
It was 24/7 for me. It was quite, you could become a bore. Ask your missus, right? Honestly.
She
thought you were borderline boring because you were just into music more than her. This is the thing. You can actually bore your best, your nearest and dearest, because you are just so wrapped up in music. You know, you've got kids walking around like this.
Yeah.
Oh. Bruv, what? Right. So
yeah, it's true.
You get people walking around the streets like that all day. And that would have been me 20 years ago. And if you don't know, if you can't get in this conversation with us, you're not my friend. I'm not interested in you. I don't want to talk. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't understand music. You weren't in my circle.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You could be the best looking woman on the planet. If you don't know your Jay-Z's from your Biggies.
Yeah.
It all came back to this conversation. I had to stop for a while. I'm into football more than anything.
True. And big up Chelsea, man, into that cup final now.
This is not going to be timeless. When's it coming out?
This might come out by the time they might have lifted it, my friend. This might do. Who knows? But yeah.
I don't know if we're going to lift it, but what a season. Who's your team?
Sheffield Wednesday, my friend. So not even...
Good. No, respect. Respect for that. Respect.
It's more the look in your eyes of like, oh.
No, I love it. You're not Man United. You're not Man United.
No, not that. No. I live in Derby now. So yeah.
Okay.
So I'm in the Midlands. But yeah, I haven't followed them for a long time. But I tell you, when I get up for it now is England. When England play, I still think there's a nice atmosphere. I'm
very looking forward to the Euros, man. It's going to be really
tricky. Yes.
Southgate can chill those players, because in Foden, he's got a worldie, man.
Yes. We're going to win it, mate. Don't worry about it. Jack Grealish will be back doing bits on the wing. We'll be fine.
Mason Mount.
Yes. Oh, wow. There you go. Your boy. Yeah. You love him.
I think we've got to wrap this. It's four o'clock.
We're going into football now.
It's 2 hours.
Oh, man. Sorry. But yes. Trevor, man, thank you again. Everyone, go check out Trevor's shows, One Extra, BBC Two, loving them. Yeah, just leaves me one question then, man. What's the last great piece of music you heard? Could be old, could also be new, but just the last piece where you're like, damn, that was amazing.
You're killing me. How can you do this to me?
Just the last great piece.
Oh, gosh. Off the top of my head, that's pretty difficult because I churn through music every week. I absolutely love Anderson .Paak as somebody who does radio and needs people who have got that something that crosses over. You're on the underground, so you know you're probably going, Anderson .Paak.
I love Anderson .Paak.
I love what he's doing. I like her, the artist. He's incredible. I think she's incredible. Good, yeah. Oh, there are so many, man, but there are so many of, you know, we've been talking about that level. We've been talking up there for these last 2 hours. And now you're asking me to start from there again. And
I'm sorry.
It's really hard.
Yeah,
no,
I'm sorry.
It's hard, man. It's hard because, oh gosh, I only play music I like. Everything to me, depending on the week, is great. And I know you stay there.
Right,
stay there. There's a way of me finding this, right? What's the most recent thing that I've played recently? And because I'm doing a Radio 2 show now, it's not going to be something young and...
No, but old. Know. I'm here for the old bangers.
It's going to be something young. All right, let's have a look. Miguel's just done a tune called So I Lie. I love it. And let me tell you something. Miguel is the guy who should have been great.
Should be the Weeknd.
Absolute great. Yeah, he should be a great. Mm. I love George Smith from the UK. I love her voice, love what she's doing. She's amazing. I'm just going for a few. Celeste. I like Celeste. She's quite mainstream, Sam Henshaw from the UK. I'm just saying, he's another guy that should have been bigger than he is. You're killing me. I don't know.
Have you heard of the group Salt? SAULT.
No. Are they crossover? Because they got a crossover. Turn me on to something.
Honestly, right? I reckon you might enjoy Salt more than most. Because
email me them.
I will. I'll get it back to you. But yeah, I reckon that's someone you might appreciate. Yeah, they're like this unknown group.
An unknown group, unsigned.
I don't know if they're unsigned, but they only dropped like two or three projects, and they're like jazz, funk, R&B, soul, bit of hip hop. It's everything. But no one
for me though. The only thing that's king for me is the song. The song is king, not the vibe, not the group. Okay. The song is absolute king. When it comes to radio, the song is king.
Right.
The vibe is for specialists. When I was a specialist, I play a lot of vibe. But I cut through with songs. And while I'm here, I'm going to promote one thing.
Go. No, absolutely.
It'll be something your listeners or viewers will want to check out. It's something called Trevor Nelson's Divas. It's on BBC Sounds, right? And it's basically, I've been asked to do podcasts and I've never done one. I've never done a podcast because I figure I've got 5 radio shows a week. No one wants to hear me any more than that, right? But then what they did, they went into the archive of all my interviews on the BBC, only on the BBC. And we came up with 8 artists that we put in the diva category with enough interviews that I've done, or Beyonce.
Yes.
So it's about 5 interviews all meshed in, you know, bits, taking bits out of her. And this is, she doesn't do interviews anymore. So it's interesting hearing her. James Brown.
Oof.
Who I say there'd be no hip hop without that man.
100%.
Let's have it as it is. Mm-hmm. When he was just 70 years old, he did a concert for me. Amazingly, I mean, it's hard to understand him, but he's amazing, and he knows his place. He knows his place in the, you know, Usher, because male divas is what they can.
Of course.
He's always been really sure of himself. I've never met anyone as sure of himself. I don't mean in an arrogant way. I mean he's always been, there's different interviews over the course of time, and you hear him, he's consistently really self-assured, which is I even tried to goad him with Justin Timberlake when Justify came up, said there's a new kid on the block, and he was in the middle of making Confessions, and I was in a studio in Atlanta with him and Jermaine Dupri. And I said that to him because Justin just came up with Justify, and he said come here. We ran outside he had this big Hummer. He put Confessions on. He said, what do you think of this? And he turned it up so loud. You know the Americans? Turned it up so loud, I could barely. It was like, no. He's like, my Confessions. And he's staring at me while I'm listening to it in the passenger seat. And I'm going, yeah, man. just a little thing I'm working up. Justin, right? Which was really funny. So he's on it.
Yeah.
Lauryn Hill.
Oh, brilliant.
You know, with the performance of, you know, and talking to her at that time was just she was so good, so great, so creative. And I haven't spoken to her since 99.
Wow.
Deliberately, I don't want the new Lauryn. I just like that Lauryn. Yeah. And I don't mean that horribly. I just mean she was great, and the demons and the problems, nothing. Mm. It was all hope and aspiration and beautiful and wicked. I got to remember Mary J.
I was going to say,
the most honest person I've ever interviewed, ever.
Okay.
Didn't even like her when I met her. And then she just became my favorite interview because she's just honest, man. You've got to love her. It's a great series. I'm not just blowing my trumpet, but it's 8 of them and it's on BBC Sounds. Please check it out. Just type in Trevor Nelson Divas and trust me, I think you'll like it.
Yeah. But I'm here for it, definitely. Mary.
Yeah. P. Diddy, your man P. Diddy.
And the Puff. Oh, right. Well, that you already know.
Puff Daddy. He's on it. So, he really is quite good at talking about hip-hop, seeing the overall picture. He actually said 20 years ago, you're going to see rappers endorsing presidents. And lo and behold, Jay-Z, Puffy, Obama.
Yeah.
Years later.
He saw it, though.
He always saw it. No matter what you think of that guy, he always saw it. amazing. It's listen, beautiful. It's been great, man.
Yeah, thank you, Trevor. Thank
it's
you.
Been great chatting.
Beautiful. Keep smashing it, and yeah, and the door's always open if you ever want to come on. And yeah, do your thing, bro. Just keep doing your thing.
You do your thing, man. You do your.
Thank all you. Right? Thank
lovely.
You, bro.
Take care, man.
Wicked. Peace, bro. Appreciate. Peace. It.